The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Good day, ladies, gentlemen, everything in between. Welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is Kyle Quincy Shireen von Cedric Parker. In Latin, I am Caelius Quintus Certicus, and I shall not be denied. There it is. Thus I have spoken, or quod erat demonstrandum, thus it is proved. The Sunday Scotch Society is a conversation that I have with my co-pilot, my good buddy, my friend, my pal.
No more than that. I'm simply pal.
Did you not hear the words that came before?
After your eight-name introduction?
It sounds like you did not hear the words.
I am Matthew B. Kelly.
But Matthew, have never, ever told us what the B stands for, just to be clear.
Correct.
and so that tradition seems like it will continue. Fair enough. So, what say you this fine day, Matthew? How goes it with you?
Mon ami, ça va. In fact, ça va bien. Besides, I mean, it is a beautiful day here in Eleuthera. Besides one small problem in this particular area, the particulate matter is, I would say, quite high, as someone upwind has decided that it is 1869 and the best way to farm is still slash and burn and fill the air with smoke for everyone downwind. But other than that, it's a damn good day, sir.
I'm glad to hear it, my friend. I'm glad to hear it. I find that these conversations that we are having, they run an interesting gamut. They can go from somewhat freewheeling, almost self-generating as they continue, to, what's the word, you know, that single-minded focus where every iota of our joint focus and concentration is on a particular point. And I like that, I guess, that freedom to be different, that freedom to explore. But today, I feel that the world is our conversational oyster. I am placing the parameters, so to speak, in my pocket, and declaring us free, as the Jaiman Hansu character said in Amistad, quite famously, when he said, "Give us free." I have given us free. We could talk about whatever strikes your fancy, as we say in the promotional materials for this wonderful excursion that we're sharing. However,
I thank you. Yes, I was about to say, before we get into that, I believe you have one thing in particular that you do want to cover.
I do. And this is, I'm fascinated by the tipple, my tipple for today, because as most of the fellow dipsomaniacs who have joined us on this this journey, let us continue to call it that, will know, recently we have sort of expanded our tastings to include things that do not qualify as single malt whiskies or even Scotch whiskies. We've tasted some bourbons. Last week I had a great sipping rum. I believe we've even done tequila on the show, if I remember correctly, a couple of really great tequilas. And we've also done a couple of Irish whiskeys. And One of the things that I mentioned last time we had an Irish whiskey on the show, I think it was the Busker that I was drinking, is that Irish whiskeys tend to be a little lighter than Scotch whiskeys. They tend to have a more, I guess, complicated, but as a result, maybe a smoother flavor profile. You know, the ones that are really popular usually have a mix of grain and malt that make up the whiskey. I'd been seeing this this particular bottle at one of my favorite haunts for months now, and I was like, you know, the heck with it. I gotta find out. I have to try it to see. And to me, before I even talk about it, I wanna to say that is one of the best ways that I have found to expand my own vocabulary as to this wonderful world of whiskey, right? If something looks interesting, bite the bullet and give it a shot, you know? Today, in the spirit of, that looks interesting, I'm trying a bottle of the Dead Rabbit Irish whiskey. One of the things that I love about this bottle is they have a little slogan on it. It's called, as I said, it's called the Dead Rabbit Irish Whiskey. And the slogan is a measure of attitude. And if that doesn't sound like you and I, Matthew, I don't know. But it just made me very interested. So that's what I'll be trying today. And I'm looking forward to it. The Dead Rabbit is actually a bar in New York that has launched its own Irish whiskey. And the bar was founded in 2013. And this whiskey is, it's a collaboration between, the co-founders of the Dead Rabbit Bar in New York, Sean Muldoon and Jack McGarry, and, master distiller Daryl McNally from Dublin Liberties Distillery. And, it's a 5-year-old blend. They launched it, I guess 2018 to mark the Dead Rabbit Bar's 5th anniversary. So it's pretty cool. The story is great. And for the purposes of the way we generally discuss these whiskeys and taste them on this pod, the maturation was in ex bourbon barrels, and then it was finished in virgin oak American casks. So that tells me right there that I'm looking for this scotch to have almost a sort of bourbon overtones, which I'm extremely interested to see how they pull that off. And it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. I mean, are you going to just get right into the nose? I want to know more about this bottle.
I thought you might tell us about what you were doing, but, you know, okay.
I mean, listen, I am by no means ashamed of what I have, but it is a fairly standard that I have come to the show before. So I want you to just get into the notes for me.
Fair enough. So the tasting notes, they talk about oak and caramel with, I guess you would say, fruit and spice aromas.
I don't want to know what they talk about. I want to know what you...
Fine. I was just trying to give some information, Matthew. But if you insist, I will do the thing.
Yeah, because you wound me up. Like you know, this is... I am experiencing this vicariously through you. So you have embarked on...
But you was the one who decided you want to go live in Elutra, you know?
My friend, listen. Duty and a decision... It's not as if I had a whole palette of things to choose from. I must do my duty. Now, but you are deflecting.
I am.
Does it have a cork?
It does. Allow me to do the thing, sir.
Let me hear the thing.
Okay. What is it that I smell? Okay. First of all, let's look at the color here. Natural color seems to be a nice burnished copper, and you can definitely smell the the alcohol in this. It's 44% alcohol by volume, which means it's 88 proof, so it's pretty strong. But after the alcohol burn goes away, I do smell those really deep, sweet notes. The vanilla from the bourbon casks. What else? It's very spicy. I wouldn't say that it smells fruity. The main aromas that I get from the nose are the caramel and the vanilla and a little bit of the smokiness, I guess we would associate with like the oak barrel aging. I can smell that on it as well. So I'm getting a feeling that this is going to be a really stout sip with some interesting complications. So I'm going to go ahead and taste this bad boy. And you'll have to
please
just,
do.
You know, let's see. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so first things first. I see what they mean when they say a measure of attitude, because they are not hiding the alcohol in this bad boy at all. it is very, very alcohol forward without being bitter, without being astringent. I mean, it is only 44% ABV, so it's not like, you know, cask strength overproof. You know, that's going to strip the gears, but it's definitely a strong drink. And it is also, it's really deep. The flavor, I would say it's caramel. The vanilla from the oak aging comes through. It really only comes through on the finish. Let me double check just to make sure. Yeah, the main flavor that I get on the sip is a little bit of caramel and a lot of the toasted sort of oaky flavor. This is actually something that I think you would like. This is really nice. This is a nice sip. I like this a lot. I think once you taste this, we can have a conversation about whether or not this gets placed on the list. Because I think it's a strong contender.
All right. Well, I look forward to that. We are running down the weeks, so not many spots left.
Yeah, for sure.
Time to get on the spots. So cheers. Look forward to it. On my side, sticking with the blended whiskeys, well, scotches actually, because so coming off a Famous Grouse, you know, that's a tough set of shoes to fill. However, this little 80 proof go-to of mine is still a scotch blended, like I said. I am at a much, much appreciated Dewar's white label. No, that's not everybody's
cup of tea. And it should be, though. It's a really good blend of whiskey. I know that as people who are supposedly, you know, scotch drinkers of a certain whatever, people may expect us to have a particular view with regard to Dewar's. But Dewar's, is especially the white label, is really good scotch, man.
I think so. So apparently blended from around 40 different scotches, with the heart of it being from the Aberfeldy. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So also recently found out in the Bacardi family now.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember where I read that, but apparently they have four or five distilleries. So cheers to them.
I'm just going to go jump in. Tell us what you think.
Okay. So a little bit alcohol forward. You know, it's not a lightweight for me. You know, a lot of people talk about honey, etc., but what I always come back to with a scotch so far is a particular note of apple. And it's like a mellow green apple to me. And I'm getting that in spades here, but like I said, mellow, not very sharp on the scent of the apple side. There's a sharpness from the alcohol, obviously. But I am also getting some wood, like a nice, not freshly cut, not wet or you know, fresh wood, but a nice dried wood It could be the oak. I'm not sure that I'm at the point where I can pinpoint particular notes of woods, but this is coming across like that. And you know what? Just the slightest hint of peach is really, I don't know, that intrigues me. Because peaches have a particular emotional impact for me.
Yeah, but yeah. Stone fruit is, you know, it's one of those flavor descriptors that really nice, sort of complex scotches will get assigned to them sometimes. So,
which is weird for me, well, from my point of view, because this is not a scotch that is that I've ever seen described as complex.
Mm-hmm.
But I really appreciate that note.
It's funny though, because the number of people around the world who drink that, the Dewar's scotches, particularly the white label, is, I bet, fairly impressive.
I mean, this, to my understanding, this is one of the best sellers in the States.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that super complex. Well, not complex at all, but medium body, medium mellowness, slight note of vanilla. Oh, there's this thing a little bit. Very, very mild. Hints of smoke, actually. And again, there's that woodiness.
That's it, yeah.
But, you know, not picking up on the honey that people talk about, but definitely worth another sip.
Yeah, what you're describing is what I remember from my last encounter with the Dewar's White Label. I think the honey is a way that people have of describing sweetness and depth at the same time.
Oh, you know what? Finally on the finish. There it is.
All right.
There it is.
Or maybe it's just a flavor.
I've seen tasting notes on this. I've seen tasting notes on this where they, you know, they swear it's, you know, it, I guess my palate is just not that great at picking up honey, but they swear it's in the nose and the palate, but I'm only getting it on finish, and it's very light. Yeah, that's, you know what? Overall, I would say, like, it has a medium body, but it's light in the way, you know what? It's fresh. Like, that is fresh in the finish for me.
I am very glad that you are able to taste something delicious while we have this conversation, whatever this conversation turns out to be.
I'm kind of happy that you are a little preoccupied this week.
Oh?
Yeah, just in that, you know, you don't have an agenda coming into the conversation, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, sometimes I just like to relax.
I feel a little bit of shade, you know, Matthew? I feel a little bit of shade.
No, mon ami. No. And excuse the heavy use of the tiny little French phrases, because I've been watching a lot of Poirot.
Now listen to me, sir.
Yes.
Listen to me, sir. Listen to me, sir. Sir, Hercule Poirot est un homme magnifique.
Oui.
Il est mon détective.
C'est vrai.
Fabrique. Je suis Hercule Poirot. When the little gray cells, they are working. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I will apologize no more. Yeah.
Do you or do you not? Please tell me you are watching the David Suchet Poirot.
I mean, listen, no shade to the others, but, you know.
Kenneth Branagh can do Poirot.
In the age of the internet, why would I choose anything less than the best?
Why? Matthew, it is a good thing you are in a Luther. Because I would kiss you right now. I would kiss you right now. And you would absolutely try to punch me.
You are, as they say, kind too much.
Now I have to ask, of the two of us, who is Poirot and who is Captain Hastings?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm not going to...
Or is one of us Mrs.
Have Lemon? Such hubris but neither am I going to denigrate myself so much. So I'm just going to abstain. And if you call me Hastings, well, we'll just have a chat offline about that.
I think both of us could be Poirot. I think both of us could be Poirot. Or one of us could be Inspector Japp.
Japp.
You might be Poirot and I might be Inspector Japp. I feel like that's probably fair. Oh my God. Listen, Poirot is my favorite of all British television, with the sole exception of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a great conversation.
You have made me a very happy man.
But
You have made me a very, very happy man.
I think we'll return to that on a different episode, because I'm happy today to just sit and ask your input just on a couple of things that I've observed over the last few weeks. Just to A, see if you were aware of certain things, and B, just to kind of get your take and see where the thread takes you. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm down, like Foxy Brown. Only thing that I'm curious about is whether you think we'll finish before Armageddon breaks out. But hey, other than that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in a race against that since before the Cuban Missile Crisis. So, speaking of missiles.
Yeah, but I mean, Israel and Iran, you know, trying to battle it out with missiles. That sounds like the start of Armageddon to me.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go
and then
for
Israel calling it a retaliatory
attack. The revelation attributed to,
St. John the Divine.
John, eh? Yeah, John the, I'm just trying to remember which John. At this point, yeah. So
Saint John the Divine.
Yes. Well, you know, that actually does ping my mind, and that one of these days, we should pick up a general conversation on esotericism. I think I got that one right. Get Stephen Cartwright back on the show. But today, I don't want to talk about the possible beginning of the end. I want to keep it a little bit more positive. But the lead into that, I did say missile as opposed to missile. And that is an observation of a distinction between cultures and generations. And in general, the sort of hard categories between, you know, boomers, Xers, Y/millennials, Zs, I'm not even going to, like, the generations after that shall remain unnamed for now. So I'm not a fan of jumping to the Greek alphabet. But I think that those distinctions are largely BS, just because there are few events that would shift culture in such a way that, you know, those would be useful. But they're good little heuristics sometimes. And this, I want to know what you think about this, right? I think that this is the only time that I can definitely see a difference from my experience here in the Bahamas. I appreciate you. I hear that all the time from millennials, and it always sort of set me off a little bit. Like, I sat down to think about it one day, and I was like, you know what it is? That's not what I grew up hearing. We say, I appreciate that. The thing that you did for me, I want to show you my appreciation for that thing. And I'm finding the millennials say, I appreciate you. Do you think that indeed is a valid observation?
It's really funny because literally someone just sent me a WhatsApp message asking me to do something. And when I did the thing, I was told, I appreciate you so much. And I'm like, this person must be listening to my conversation with Matthew, because I don't know that you and I are that far apart. So we're not that far apart, but, but sometimes I feel like because you are a little closer to them than I am, you may be a little more sensitive to some of the nuances that I would dismiss as bad language use. But you see not bad language use, but an intentionality of the language or the language usage that's different, and that comes from a motivation that I might not necessarily pick up on right away. Do I agree or not that there's a difference between I appreciate that and I appreciate you, and that the millennials use I appreciate you?
Yeah.
More than they use I appreciate that. Yes, they do. But I think that is reflective of something else that I've noticed, and it is as we are moving down the chain of generations, one of the things that is becoming more and more, I think it starts with maybe your boomers, and then it moves through, right? But it's like there is a refusal almost to abide by the concept of being judged. People do not want to be judged. They don't want you judging them. Okay, so let's take your baby boomers, people born between 46 and 64 approximately, right? They were very accepting of the moral and philosophical world that they were given. The ones who were considered subversive carried on their subversive behavior very privately because they did not want to buck the system. Generation Xers, that's me, between 65 and 75, or 76, or, you know, these are approximate dates, right?
Oh, no, okay. First of all, to reiterate that this is a very fuzzy concept, and it's not even valid most of the time, but it's been extended even up to like 82.
I'm not sure why.
Well, I consider myself to be part of the last of the Xers. And there's for a brief period, there was a usage of a term called Xennial, X-E-N, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a very apt description for people from roughly 74 to like 84. You know, it's like this weird transition period, and the people amongst the last who would mature or have adolescence without the internet in some form.
Yeah, I guess if you frame it around the advent of the internet and its dominance, then I guess some of the arbitrariness goes away, and I can see that. So I also think that
a lot of this is conceived in the U.S., right? And a lot of those cultural trends tend, in my experience, over the decades, have tended to come to the Bahamas, but in a delayed fashion, right? So if cultural trends in the U.S. had Xers ending at a certain point, those things might still be drifting over into the Bahamas for as far as it is valid, which, again, very fuzzy thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Like my point was that the willingness to accede to the judgment of your community, your peers, yes. I think that willingness weakens through the successive generations, right? The millennials, people who were born after 70, let's say 77, 78, to the mid-90s, you know, they inherited a world from the Generation X people who had struggled very hard to throw off the yoke of judgment, the bondage of judgment, right? They didn't want, this is why people, when you consider in so many countries around the world, the move to get rid of God, right? We got rid of God because we don't want the judgment of Judeo-Christian morality or religious morality writ large, whether it's Christian or not. We don't want the judgment of morality from a religious base to be the determining factor of what is good or bad in our lives. And in the millennials, you see a search for how they're going to determine and define what is good and what is bad. And even if those terms, good and bad, have any relevance, right? I feel like I remember in philosophy classes and psychology classes, we talked about situational ethics. And I think the millennials, frankly speaking, are a case study in situational ethics. What is right for me in this moment is all that matters. And it has no bearing on another moment or another person. And I think by the time you get to Generation Z, or even the Alphas now, as they, I believe they're called, there is no concept of being beholden to somebody else's view. And the idea of being judged is so anathema that pronouns have now become cause for concern. You cannot, in a job training video that I was watching the other day, the warning against using gendered language was included in the onboarding process for a global multilateral. As in, you know, how in the 40s, 50s, 60s, probably even up to the 70s and 80s, you would have said, you would have automatically used the male pronoun when you're speaking of an anonymous doctor or lawyer or teacher or engineer or whatever, right? And when you're speaking of a group of people who do business, you would have said businessmen. But now you have to very deliberately say business people, because some of the business people might be women, and you do not wish to disenfranchise them or insult them by ignoring them by saying businessmen, even though when you say businessmen, you mean all of the people who are doing business, including men and women. And so,
yeah, I think. Go ahead.
Maybe I'm conflating, but I feel like the two things kind of go together for me. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that there's a fairly accurate observation about judgment on one layer, and I want to extend that, but then come back and revisit the idea of not wanting to be judged, in that it's not just that you want to be sans judgment, but it's also that you want to be positively validated, it seems to me, right? So the usage of "I appreciate you" is like, it doesn't matter what you do, right? And I'm not judging you, but also like you are important. I appreciate you. Now I'm not speaking to the sincerity of this, you know, because that's case to case, etc. But the overall general trend in the language is sort of communicating to me these trends in the culture. And while I think it's that two-part thing, I like no judgment and also positive validation, it's also on a different level, which I think you touched on slightly, that within group, you very much do care about judgment. And there are particular values that must be adhered to. And if they are not, they're severely socially punished. So on the one hand, no judgment. And on the other hand, severe judgment. And this weird dichotomy, duality, almost like cross... what is the word that I want? Anyway, they seem in opposition to each other, but they are, in my experience, very, very real. And I think a discussion with a few younger people who regularly use this stuff, but is in order before the end of the year. But I do want to touch on, for the benefit of millennials, Gen Z, and even alphas. Oh, it hurts me to say that. I just want to give you an ex's perspective, right? So I have no problem with this language evolving in a particular way. And I think it's generally used to mean, you know, more or less the same thing, even though, like, there are different overtones because of the cultural shifts, right? But just so a millennial and younger can understand, right? If you tell me, I appreciate you, and it's really because of something that I did, right? Unless you are a close friend or family, my reaction is, you appreciate me. You don't know me. So it comes off very insincere. I know it's not meant to do that, right? But it triggers in me, like, oh, I appreciate you. You can't appreciate me. You don't know me. You have no conception of me. You have no deep connection. There's no way that you could appreciate me. And therefore, this must be insincere. When that is not what they are trying to express. But
and that,
the shift in the language, and from our point of view, is like, you know, I did a thing for you. I really appreciate that you appreciate the thing. And maybe this is something that could lead to a bond where you could get to the point where we can appreciate each other. But for right now, you don't appreciate me. You can't. Just say you appreciate that. I'm not trying to make them change. I'm just saying they're triggering in a lot of Xers. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, but
your reaction.
Do you recall the okay boomer trend, eh?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know why that annoyed me?
And you,
because anyone 3 years older than you all of a sudden became a boomer. Anyone who disagreed with you, you were able to label as, oh, that's old fashioned, okay boomer, right? It wasn't that it wasn't true in some circumstances, but it was just like, okay, bring out the broad brush. Here we go. There's this nice sounding trend. We're all just going to beat it to death.
I feel like you have feelings about this, Matthew.
I mean, I have feelings about a lot of stuff. You know, I haven't even had a quarter of a finger of White Label yet.
That might, but I'll leave that alone. The thing about the reason I mentioned OK Boomer is because when my friends and I felt like we wanted to talk our own little secret language and we didn't want to be annoyed by having to either mind what we said or explain what we were saying, we went to our private places to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever those private places might have been. I feel like with the Gen Z and the alphas and their problematic relationship with authority, I feel like they have decided that if you are not willing to embrace everybody, you are rejecting everybody.
I don't think that's the case. I think that sometimes they frame it that way to themselves, but that's clearly not the case, because it's anyone who doesn't believe whatever is on the table. And it's not like there's a monolith of what should be believed, right? I think it's varying from area to area, subculture to subculture, etc. But I don't think that it's
alphas, though.
Mm-hmm. I agree in that. I think they frame it to themselves sometimes like that, but the very act of railing out against someone who doesn't accept what you think should be accepted, whether it's in your mind, everyone or not, is in itself not accepting them. Now, I'm not saying I'm separating this from accepting actions, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this comes back to the conversation about you versus it, right? But yeah, I don't disagree with your overall assessment. I just think that's a distinction that I have observed, that some people in certain, you know, and again, it varies all over the world from subculture to subculture, but people will say, well, we're very accepting, except if you don't like what we say. And that has been the case for, don't get me wrong, the dawn of civilization. But it's different in amount and expression now. But hey, if you don't have too much to say about that, there's some other things I want to ask your input on.
I feel, so the problem is this, right? You and I generally have agreed that we are not going past an hour on this particular journey of the show.
Follow me. You didn't come to the show with anything in particular, man. So just follow me here. You know, let's end on something.
I didn't come to the show with anything in particular, bro. I'm trying to.
Let's end with something a little less controversial. I want to know if you follow space flight at all.
Do I follow space flight at all?
Yes.
No.
No. Okay. But you are aware from time to time of like really big things that may happen, I'm assuming. So
yes, things like when
Hubble was launched way back in the day, when James Webb went up a few years ago on Christmas, etc.
Yes.
Okay. So two very important flights just happened, and I want to get how you feel about them, or if you feel about them at all.
Let me preface this by saying, mm-hmm. any of these two involved a certain tech billionaire owner of a social media enterprise.
But he's irrelevant to the conversation.
All right, good.
Yeah, I'm not interested in personalities. And, you know, if I don't know you, I have nothing to say about you. And I certainly don't know any billionaires.
That you know.
Yeah, very true. Very true. But then those would be the best kind. So, yes, SpaceX is building a very, very large rocket. We won't get into specifics. But the main thing about this is that most of space flight until the last decade or so has been on rockets that are spent to put a very tiny payload, just because of the way that physics works, into orbit to do something. Sometimes it's just to be around Earth, sometimes go around the moon, sometimes to go around planets way out there, and we get really cool science out of it. But SpaceX has developed boosters that can land back, which means you get to reuse them, which means that costs plummet, right? Which means you could do more rocketry. So more cool stuff goes up and prices come down. Private people could do really cool things. But that's just the booster part. So in most situations, you have to get multiple stages to get you up to where you want to go. They are developing now a huge rocket in two parts, And they've decided that they want this thing to be completely reusable to bring down costs. The analogy that's used most of the time is if a 747 had to be scrapped every time it made a flight, then flights would be really expensive. So you want a reusable airplane, you want a reusable rocket. But mm-hmm. what they decided to do with this thing is eliminate the landing gear and catch it on the tower that it launched from. And so in the fifth test flight of this thing, right, they were actually able to do that, which is an insane engineering accomplishment. Always physically possible, but the question was, like, can we ever technically get there? And that question was answered in that flight, and it was just a crazy thing to see a skyscraper come back out of the sky and float over and be caught in between two little chopsticks. Well, they're not little, but they, you know, look that way from far away, and just rest there. So, number one, does that sort of thing engender any thoughts in you whatsoever, or are you just like, oh, something cool happened?
I feel like I wish that I had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like the kind of thing that has more of a visual impact than an impact through the kind of storytelling that you're doing now, frankly speaking. So I admit to
not being the greatest storyteller just now, but
no. But even so, I don't think it would have mattered how great a storyteller you were. To me, my imagination is telling me that's something really cool to see. So that would have been the way that I would have loved to have experienced that particular revelation. But
I am going to send
the
you
the idea.
I want you to record your reaction. Yeah. for our social media, I want as the social media appendix to the show, I want you to record your reaction to watching it.
I will do so. I will absolutely do so. It sounds really cool. I don't think I have a proper grasp of the scope. So beyond that, I'm afraid I have nothing for you, sir.
No problem, man.
But I look forward to your reaction
when I send you the clip.
I did raise my glass of Dead Rabbit in a salute, so there is that.
Speaking of that, how is that finish for you?
It's really good. The vanilla is not overpowering. You know, sometimes with bourbon, especially the ones that have been aged really long, the vanilla flavoring at the end can just be overpowering, right? Some people really like it, but to me, it's one of the things I like least about a good bourbon. This whiskey has a sort of a vanilla flavor, but the finish really is just very balanced between the Irish whiskey and the bourbon antecedents. And I like it. I'm drinking it neat, but I can imagine it great on the rocks. I can imagine it really amazing whiskey sour. I can imagine all kinds of great uses for it. The name, though, I meant to tell you this earlier and I forgot to say, the name, the Dead Rabbits, I've come up with two possible antecedents for the name. In 1857, there was an American vernacular based on a Gaelic word, ribeef, which means man to be feared. And, of course, the word dead is a slang intensifier, meaning very. So, Dead Rabbit, therefore, means a man to be greatly feared. So that's one possibility. And the other possibility is a dead rabbit having been thrown into the center of a room during a gang meeting, prompting some gang members to treat it as an omen, withdraw, and form an independent gang, and their battle symbol was a dead rabbit on a pike. So I'm assuming that it's one of those two that that led to the name of this thing, but who knows? You know, all I know is it's a really good sip. And well, that's,
I look forward to having a sip with you.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it for now.
Yeah.
My brother, well, thank you.
As always, it was good talking to you, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is, I'm glad that you're doing well and safe in Eleuthera. I hope your folks are good. I hope your family is enjoying the land of pineapples and all the other things that Eleuthera is known for.
Sea grapes.
And crazy women. But you married one of them, so I ain't getting enough. All right, bro. We'll talk again another time. God bless.
Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Sunday Scotch Society. That's that over ya.
Ciao.
Hey, fellow dipsomaniacs. This is K. Quincy Parker, co-host of the Sunday Scotch Society. And listen, we had an opportunity to watch the capture of the SpaceX booster by the chopsticks, and I just wanted to say, watching it was pretty incredible. I promised Matthew that I'd record my reactions, and I did, and we'll post those on the show social media. But I just wanted to say, wow, what an incredible accomplishment. In terms of just sheer technical genius, in terms of engineering and mechanical genius, wow, what's it almost left me like speechless, because I mean, you want to just dismiss, again, I'll speak for myself. I would like to just write SpaceX off because Elon Musk is a brilliant billionaire, but he's also Elon Musk. And as such, I kind of want to, ignore everything he does. But this is now, I think, the third thing Elon Musk has done that's showed up on the Sunday Scotch Society. So clearly his companies are doing true cutting edge science and technology. And it's quite impressive what SpaceX has done. And I wanted to just mark down that Matthew was correct on this one. This is something that any sort of technology or engineering fan or devotee should see. And if you have kids who are inclined in that direction, you should definitely look up the video, tell them the story, let them watch it, just so they could see some of the incredibly amazing things. I mean, this is a, as Matthew said in the show, this thing is the size of a skyscraper. And to watch it just get plucked out of the air, I mean, just if you think of the scale alone, wow, just what an amazing accomplishment. And the other thing that I wanted to share, right? So I had mentioned that I was drinking the Dead Rabbit Irish Whiskey, which is a product of the Dead Rabbit Bar in New York City. That they had commissioned for their fifth anniversary in 2018. And the name, the Dead Rabbit, is just, it's such an iconic name. And I gave two, I guess you would call them potential antecedents for where the name came from. Well, the second one turns out to have been closer to true, when you look at the Dead Rabbit website, it points out that the Dead Rabbits were a criminal organization formed in the mid-1800s to protect the Irish underclass against the Bowery Boys, which is an American, well, a sort of a nativist New York gang. And so the Dead Rabbits were formed, and they had extensive connections in New York politics, and their leader was an immigrant named John Morrissey, who was known for being a bare-knuckle boxer, and he climbed the ranks from gang boss to gambler to casino owner and world champion prize fighter. And by the time of his death in 1878, he was an acclaimed businessman, congressman, and politician. So that's what the Dead Rabbit name represents. And it is... the whiskey itself was really, really good, and I did not want to let the name not be properly recognized for what it is. So that's why I decided to add this little bit to the end of the show. And thank you very much for sticking around, and thank you so much for joining Matthew and I on this Sunday Scotch Society journey. We're having a great time, and we hope that you are too, and that you continue to stay with us. So, as I say every time, does that over you.